This morning, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford had to relive her trauma in front of the world. Dr. Blasey Ford, who has accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault, testified and is still really answering questions in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. She said she has received death threats. She's been separated from her family for safety reasons. Her email has been hacked. She said she testified to tell the committee how Kavanaugh's actions have damaged her life. We weren't really sure what was going to happen with the timing. So since they are going to break, we are just going to open the lines. We'll get in touch with our guests to see if they can join us. But this is just bringing out a lot of opinions, emotions, thoughts from so many people. So if you've been tuning in and you'd like to talk about what you think of the process, what you think of what Dr. Blasey said this morning, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. As many politicians have said, this really is unprecedented. A lot of us were not really sure what was going to happen. In fact, Democrats said that they did not get details about what was going to happen until the very last minute. And so we have this sex crimes prosecutor, Rachel Mitchell, who was brought in by Republicans to question Dr. Ford. And so what's happening is the Democrats are asking questions for 5 minutes, and Rachel Mitchell is stepping in for all of the Republicans for 5 minutes. And to hear the questions by Rachel Mitchell, so many of the experts that have been on our show say this is why survivors do not come forward. And of course, for so many other reasons. So what do you think about this process, about where we are right now, about the questioning? Give us a call, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. It sounds like we are on taking a 20 or so minute break, and then they're going to go back to questioning Dr. Ford, and then Brett Kavanaugh will be giving his opening statement, and he will also be questioned. Let's go to Leslie Levy, an attorney and partner at Levy, Vinnick, Bernal, Hyams. Her primary focus is representing employees, especially women who have faced or are facing discrimination or harassment on the job. She also represents victims of sexual abuse by professionals such as doctors, therapists, and teachers. Hi, Leslie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yes, thank you for coming on, given that we didn't really know what the timing was going to be like. Let's specifically talk about Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony. What really stood out for you listening to her?
I think that if you watch her as you listen to her, the emotions that well up in her when she talks about what happened that day or that evening 36 years ago, very compelling. I think her level of detail about the actual trauma is very compelling. I see very, very minimal inconsistencies that the prosecutor has even been able to find. And I think her credibility is stunning.
I was struck by some of the questions that are being asked by Rachel Mitchell, the sex crimes prosecutor. I mean, she's basically standing in for the Republican male senators on the committee. What are your thoughts about the questions she's asking?
I think she's very carefully trying to pick at any inconsistencies, no matter how minor, that she can find, and that she's trying to imply that the lawyers are hiding something, the whole thing with the lie detector test and them wanting the audio and all of that that they claim is being kept from them. I think that she's just kind of chipping away at the edges because that's really all she has.
And I have to say, listening to this, the questions were almost more traumatic to listen to than Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony, because I was thinking about all of the survivors who don't come forward for this very reason. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, I think that survivors, each each survivor has their own reason for not coming forward, but this kind of scrutiny and questioning is exactly what they're fearful of, and it's what Dr. Ford was concerned about, being thrust into the spotlight and after living a life that was very private and being picked at for things that don't go to the essence of what happened to her. It used to be even worse when rape crisis, when women would be asked about all their sexual contacts with other people, and thanks to the rape crisis movement, that area has been basically off limits. But I think that, the attempt prosecutor to find anything that might question her credibility rather than going to the essence of what happened is traumatic, is stunning. And the truth is, this prosecutor knows better. This prosecutor knows that the kinds of memories that Dr. Ford has are exactly the kinds of memories that trauma survivors have.
Mm. Well, we have a number of callers on the line. Let's go to Mary in Berkeley. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me. My daughter was raped in San Francisco in her early 20s. She was drugged. She was raped all night in a hotel. When she came to, she saw the man. She ran. She identified him at the police department in a book because he had a record. And the response from the police department was you were drugged. You don't remember. You could have gone there willfully on your own. Do you want to go through he said, she said? And they did nothing. This has affected her life. It's affected our family's life. And my heart goes out to Mrs. Ford for what she, Dr. Ford, for what she's going through. Mm. And this is why women don't come forward. They get assaulted twice.
Right.
Three times.
How is your daughter doing now, Mary?
She's doing much better. She's been in therapy. She suffered a long time. I've been in therapy. Mm. Because it was a mother's worst nightmare for something like this to happen to your daughter. She's doing well. She's doing well now. But it's going to affect her to the day she dies.
Right.
It doesn't go away. It doesn't go away.
Hey, Mary, can I ask you one more question? When we did the show last week about survivors, a number of people wrote in and talked about how difficult it is to find resources. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you and your daughter?
She went to a place in San Francisco. It wasn't that good. I think it was through, I can't remember. It's been 15 years mm-hmm. or so. I was lucky enough to go to a, PhD doctor in Reno. I live north of Reno. I live in Susanville. I'm in Berkeley today. And I did EMDR therapy, eye movement desensitization reprogramming. She was doing a study, so I got free treatment because she was doing a study if I did filled out forms. But I don't feel there's too much help out there. I mean, I'm sure there are, but, you're supposed to just go on with your life.
Right. Well, and we learned that there is a committee victims fund here in California, but one of our listeners said that his wife had a really difficult time getting the help, and that process mm-hmm. was really traumatic because she had to mm-hmm. fill out paperwork and then was denied the help that she needs.
Yeah, and you don't need to be doing paperwork when something like this happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Mary...
So the police department was my biggest and her biggest
right.
complaint. Yeah.
Wow.
And then the man, the hotel called the police department, said, because they went to the hotel, and the next day they said, hey, he's rented a room again.
Mm.
Yeah,
wow.
This man hasn't been stopped. I mean, the next night he rented another room.
Wow.
So, yeah, just horrible.
I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for calling and sharing your story.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie,
may I?
Please.
Yeah. So a couple of things come to mind. First is I think people really need to understand that women, as hard as it is for women to come forward about this, according to the police and FBI statistics, the percentage of false reports is somewhere between 2% and 5%.
Hmm.
So that means that at least 95% of the reports that they're getting, or that women report even outside the police, are in fact deemed to be accurate. And that's very important to remember. It's also, one of the interesting things about this hearing is it's not clear to us what the standard is. So when this woman's daughter, who my heart goes out to, went to the police, of course they said it was he said, she said, because that's almost always how it happens. And in a criminal context, the district attorney has to feel like they can prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. In a civil context, it just means it's more likely than not to have happened. And what's interesting about these hearings with Dr. Ford is they're not talking about what the standard is. They're not talking about if that committee believes or a person on that committee believes it's more likely than not that happened. What does that mean about how they vote?
Right. Well, and in this case, what would you say, Leslie, in terms of what has really changed when you think about the reporting process? I mean, how long have you been doing this kind of work?
35 years.
Wow, 35 years. That's amazing. So when you look at, when you talk to survivors about reporting, what has really changed over that time?
So I have to give a lot of credit to the rape crisis movement for the changes that we do have. So, for instance, in many police departments, not all and not always, there's a sex crimes unit, and often the detectives in that unit are much more sensitive. They understand what trauma is and try to do what's called a trauma-informed interview. College campuses now tend to have rape crisis centers and counselors, which is very important given the frequency of rape for college students. I think the what are called the rape shield laws have been developed, which are the laws that prohibit, at least in California, a prosecutor or in a civil case, the questioning of a witness about their sexual contact with anyone other than the perpetrator. So there has been movement forward, but I think what's very scary is the fact that, at least according to statistics on the radio and TV now, is that something like 30% or more of this country thinks that Judge Kavanaugh should be confirmed, even if what Dr. Ford is saying is true. And that means that we haven't yet had a culture change about the issue of sexual assault and what it does to the women who are victims of it.
Wow. Well, thank you again for calling in, Mary. And if you're just tuning in, this is your call. We are in the middle of a break. Dr. Blasey Ford has testified this morning. She has been taking questions from Democratic senators, and she has been taking questions from sex crimes prosecutor Rachel Mitchell. The Republican senators are not asking any question. Rachel Mitchell is basically standing in for them, questioning Dr. Blasey Ford. So we weren't sure what the schedule was going to be like. They did break, and so we decided to open up the lines and take your calls, and we'll go back to the hearing once it begins. You can join us at 866-798-8255. If you have a story to tell, if you want to just talk about what this is bringing up for you, what's on your mind right now, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today we are joined by Leslie Levy, an attorney and partner at Levy, Vinnick, Burrell, and Hyams. Her primary focus is representing employees, especially women who have faced or are facing discrimination or harassment on the job. Let's go next to Chris in Cupertino. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. So I wanted to second what Mary is talking about with resources for trauma survivors. I was raped 3 separate times when I was 19 years old. That's now over 30 years ago. And I have spoken about it I've spoken out. I did not report. And there were reasons for that. I agree that it's not easy for it's not easy for a young person to do that, especially one without family support. As far as resources go, there are a number of things that have helped me as a survivor. Here in the Bay Area, the YMCA of Silicon Valley has a rape recovery program, a counseling program. And they're also, I also did EMDR. EMDR was uniquely satisfactory. If you have survived an assault or any form of trauma, EMDR is a type of therapy that gives you the opportunity to process it without talking about it so much. And sometimes we get trapped in the talking about it with the, you know, the struggle to remember and put words to all the details. It can be re-traumatizing. EMDR kind of bypasses that, and it's worth looking into for anyone who has suffered trauma of any sort. I would say for someone who has survived particularly the sexual type of trauma, working with a CSAT or a certified sex addiction therapist may be one of the best channels you can go through, because they are aware of the trauma impact. They are aware of the details that a therapist who is not specialized in this may get triggered. Their own stuff may come up, their own biases may come up, and there may be shaming of the client. I guess that's all I wanted to say about that. But I definitely wanted to say it. I'm listening to the hearing today. I have been watching this in the news for at least the past couple of days, and it's sure that so many people are impacted by this and triggered on both sides. And I think that really, realistically, public conversation about the impact of trauma and the science behind a trauma response, and the way that we experience assault or any type of violation, more needs to come forward about this. These are not things that you medicate to solve. Mm-hmm. They're not things that you suppress to solve. It needs to be reprocessed. It would be nice if it could be talked about. In the cases where it cannot be safely talked about, EMDR, I almost feel like is a must. And I would love to see that discussed more widely in the public and in the media.
Well, Chris, thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for these recommendations. EMDR and the YMCA in Silicon Valley has rape recovery counseling, and we'll put links on our website after the show. This is KALW San Francisco. This is Your Call. This morning, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford had to relive her trauma in front of the world. She has accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault. She testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and now she is being questioned by Democratic senators. And then on the Republican side, the Republicans are not asking her questions. They brought in Rachel Mitchell to ask her questions. And we wanted to open the lines and hear from you if you've got stories to share, if this is bringing up anything for you, whatever's on your mind. Give us a call, 866-798-8255. If you have any resources that you'd like to share, because this came up last week where people say that it's hard to find resources, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's go to Bob in Richmond.
Rose?
Oh, yes. Leslie?
I just wanted to add a couple of resources.
Oh, sure.
There's in San Francisco Women Against Rape has counseling, both peer counseling and other referrals and resources. And in the East Bay Area Women Against Rape, these are organizations that have existed for probably more than 25 years. And they do provide services, and they provide services at low or no cost. And their major, and I also think we need to comment that given that the estimates are 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 women have been sexually assaulted in their lifetimes, it's kind of appalling that we don't have easily accessible resources to deal with something of epidemic proportion.
Right, because for many people, counseling can be very expensive. It's hard to find the right therapist. It's a very difficult process, right, Leslie?
It is very difficult and costly and limited in maybe the number of sessions. But the rate price of counseling centers, which are in pretty much every urban area, at least in California, are fabulous resources. And as I said, again, offering both peer counseling, sometimes group counseling, as well as referrals to private counseling.
Well, if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's go to Bob in Richmond. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I just was wanted to call in as a lawyer myself and as a male. First of all, obviously, Dr. Ford is showing incredible courage and integrity in what she's doing. But as I represent people who have licenses issued by the state, doctors, nurses, all sorts of people. And I've represented a number of people who are accused of sexual misconduct and sexual assault. And the thing that strikes me about this is that the only way you're going to find out, really, I mean, I believe, what happened is through some kind of criminal law enforcement investigation like the FBI. And it's striking to me that Judge Kavanaugh, as a judge, hasn't himself encouraged such an investigation. It's the easiest and most honest way to find out who, in fact, did what here on some level. And if Dr. Ford is not believed, and if this doesn't result in him having to step down, perhaps a complaint to the American Bar Association about him on an ethical basis might be the next step. But an FBI investigation would be, to me, the manner in which most of the clients I have dealt with have had to, you know, be handled was either a local police investigation or, if they were federally licensed, a federal investigation. So it's interesting that no one on the committee of the Democrats has really been pressing that matter, that Judge Kavanaugh himself could actually participate in requesting such an investigation if he's so sure he's innocent.
Hmm. Well, thank you. And I mean, just to add to what we're talking about here, yesterday two other breaking stories came down. NBC News reports that an anonymous complaint was sent to Republican Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado. Kavanaugh physically assaulted a woman he socialized with in the Washington, D.C. area in 1998 while he was inebriated. And then Bloomberg's Jennifer Epstein reported on Twitter last night another accusation against Kavanaugh that he was asked about by Senate staffers this week, an alleged rape on a boat in Rhode Island in 1985, Kavanaugh denies. So, Leslie, we're talking about five accusations here.
That's pretty stunning. But I'd like to comment about the FBI investigation for a minute. While I think that it would be important for it to be done, I think we all need to remember that during the Anita Hill hearing, or during the Clarence Thomas hearing, even though she was targeted, there were other witnesses that the committee refused to hear who would have corroborated her, who had additional instances of things that happened with Clarence Thomas. So the doing of an FBI investigation does not guarantee that what information they find actually will come to light, because the Republicans control that access. Just like they're not having Ramirez testify, there's no way they can have these other women come forward if they're going to hold a vote tomorrow. And it's my understanding that the Republican staffers failed to show up for a phone call with Ramirez's attorney that was off.
That is Leslie Levy, an attorney and a partner at Levy, Vinnick, Burrell, and Hyams. Her primary focus is representing employees, especially women who have faced or are facing discrimination. And we weren't sure what the timing was going to be like for this hearing. And since they broke for lunch before 10 o'clock, we decided to go live. I believe that Leslie might be on her way here. Until we get a better line with Leslie, let's just wait until we do that, because we have so many people on the phone right now. A couple of comments on Facebook. Facebook. We're live on Facebook. Sarah writes, how cowardly are the Republican male senators that hide behind a female prosecutor to ask questions on their behalf? It does not say much about the Republican side. Unfair and injustice for this woman. Dixie writes, after watching Dr. Ford testify, I broke down in tears. I'm a survivor of a double sexual assault at the age of 19. It's been 45 years of vividly recalling the assaults and keeping quiet about it. I now know that my drinking and distance that I keep between myself and intimate relationships is the cause of suppressing this and not speaking my truth and not seeking counseling. Well, Dixie, thank you so much for sharing your story. And, you know, I want to ask our next guest about what you just brought up. Let me welcome Tanis Crosby of the YWCA Silicon Valley, an organization dedicated to eliminating racism and empowering women. Hi, Tanis. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. You know, Dixie's story, it's been 45 years for her, and she remembers what happened so vividly. She says the drinking and the distance that has kept herself between, you know, intimate relationships is the cause of suppressing this and not seeking counseling. How common is this?
It's extremely common, and I just want to say directly to Dixie and survivors who are listening that we hear you, we believe you, we are here to support you. We have a 24-hour crisis support line, and I can provide that number now. It's 1-800-572-2782. That number again, 1-800-572-2782. We are available for survivors and loved ones of survivors 24 hours a day. Call, we'll answer. And we're really wanting to make sure that survivors hear that message loud and clear today and every day.
And for Dixie and so many others, it's been a long time. In Dixie's case, 45 years. Tanis, in your experience, what happens when survivors come forward decades after the assault happened?
Well, that is what trauma looks like. And I really want to emphasize that the question of why did she wait is one that is just not factually supported by evidence, by science. Trauma looks different for each person. It is very common for individuals to doubt, to repress, and then to blame themselves. So it's very common, and we really want to make sure that we resoundingly say we support survivors in how they choose to come forward, when they choose to come forward, and that there are a range of supports and services available to help them where they are at today.
Well, Dixie, thank you so much for sharing your story. And one more question for Dixie, Tanis. We have heard on many shows about how difficult it is to find therapy, even in a state like California that has a victims fund. What would you say is the best way so that experience isn't also traumatizing?
Mm-hmm. Well, reach out to your local rape crisis and sexual assault center. YWCA Silicon Valley serves San Jose up to Palo Alto. So we are available, and again, that number is 1-800-572-2782. We provide a range of services, including crisis support, peer counseling, therapy. We have a range of services for survivors of sexual assault, domestic violence, and human trafficking. And we want to ensure that survivors know that we are here for you, we believe you, we have a range of services available to meet you where you are at today. And I would encourage survivors and loved ones, if you need support, reach out. We are here for you.
All right. Well, thank you, Dixie. I really hope that helps. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Again, that phone number is 800-572-2782. Let's go next to Maria and Benicia. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good to be here. Hello?
Hi. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, well, I am a survivor from pretty much the same decade, 1982, I believe this happened. I had gone to a nightclub, but I didn't drink. I was a teetotaler. And the man with whom I was supposedly getting a ride, quote, home with, did not take me home. He took me to a deserted park in the area, and I'll never forget it, obviously. I know his name. And frankly, if he was in office, he was the son of a lawyer with a very unusual last name. I've tried to look him up. But if he came forward and decided to run for public office or something, public sector, I would definitely come forward, as Ms. Ford has done. And when I'm listening to the testimony today from her, crying, so clearly the situation
if you'd like
has
to make
not
a gone. Again, if you need help, hang up and then dial.
Sorry, Maria, are you still there?
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and...
Maria, did we lose Maria? All right, Maria, I'm sorry. If we disconnected with you... Okay, Maria, are you still there? Hello, Maria? All right, I'm sorry. I think we lost you. Maria, we're having some technical problems, so if we lost you, would you please give us a call back, and we will bump you to the front of the line. Sorry about that, Marina. This is your call. This morning, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testified in front of the Judiciary Committee. We were not sure what the timing would be. They broke for lunch about 40 minutes ago. We'll see what time it begins, and we'll go right back to that, the questioning. Dr. Blasey Ford is being questioned by Democrats, but on the Republican side, she is not being questioned by Republicans. She is being questioned by Rachel Mitchell, who is a sex crimes prosecutor. And if you have a story to share, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. If you have a story to share, or if you'd like to talk about resources so others can, you know, possibly get therapy if they decide to do that, we would love to hear from you. Maria, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
Yes, so as I was saying, I would definitely come forth, as Ms. Ford has, if I learned or found out that this man who assaulted me and could have killed me, because we were in a deserted park in the area, alone, nobody else around, in the middle of the night, if he went into the public sector, I would definitely come forth, as she has. Hello?
Yes, you're still there.
Yeah. So I would definitely do that because it has affected me, as why wouldn't it? And whether you get therapy or not, it will affect you. And you will always remember the details pretty clear. You might not remember every single. It's been 35 years.
Wow.
But I remember his name. I don't remember the date. I remember the place. I remember what happened. So it's there in my mind. I'll never forget it.
Maria, have you received therapy since then?
No. I didn't go to any therapy, no.
Hmm. And have you talked to many people about it, or how have you dealt with it?
I have talked to a few people about it. I choose who I talk to, but I think now maybe I'm talking to more people about it. Maybe that's my own therapy that I'm choosing. I did. My mother and father, of course, he drove me back. Actually, he drove me part of the way back from the deserted park. He asked me, he said, well, if this were different circumstances, I'd give you roses. And he said, well, I'll drive you back to your parents. I was living with my parents at the time, and he said, I'll drive you back there. I said, no, you're not going to do that. And so he did drop me off close by, and I walked the rest of the way. And, of course, my parents, I'm an only child, they were very concerned, and they were my father was waiting, and he told me to never tell his sister, my aunt, they're all deceased now, but because she had been gang raped in Oakland when she was young, and never married because of that reason, probably. And so yeah, so I never told her, and so there's all these secrets. And I was going to go to the police. My mother had talked to a police officer in the area, but at that time, the police officer told me that his wife, I guess, had been in a similar situation, and he'd still been going for quite some time, and it really hadn't seemed to have done her any good. I thought to myself at that time, well, if it's not doing her any good, I don't think it's really going to do me any good anyway, and I'd rather get involved with something more positive in my life. So I fortunately was able to go into a relationship within the next 6 or 7 years, which lasted 15 years until he passed away of
alcoholism. That was a wonderful 15-year relationship. Somehow I was able to have that, and then I've had one since then. But, you know, it definitely does affect your life, whether you go to therapy or not. It just, clearly it is affecting me, because if I'm crying during Ms. Ford's testimony, then there's something to be said for how it's affecting me.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story, Maria.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Joining us now in studio is Leslie Levy, an attorney and partner at Levy, Vinnick, Burrell, and Hyams. They represent women who have faced or are facing discrimination or harassment. Thanks for coming in, Leslie.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's we're hearing so many stories. Maria just called. It's been 35 years,
yeah.
And she hasn't sought out therapy. She's dealing with it the best that she can.
I think that's probably the more common story.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how limited access people, women particularly, have to therapy. I also think that therapy isn't always something that culturally or class-wise is a resource that you think of, or nor is it the only way to deal with it. But I think more often than not, women just cope the best they can.
Mm-hmm.
And it does affect them for the rest of their lives, either by suppression or and coming out in other ways or by its manifestations.
You know, when we've done shows about this sexual abuse inside the Catholic Church, survivor groups have told us that any time a big story breaks, the hotline is just full of calls. And I'm just wondering, with Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testifying and the world really watching this, I'm guessing the same thing's probably going to happen.
I suspect it is. These are all triggers.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think particularly when somebody like Dr. Ford is willing to put themselves in the limelight, it has a twofold effect. On one hand, I think it scares a lot of women about coming forward because they see what happens. On the other hand, I think it gives a lot of women courage. I think the fact that women are talking about what happened decades ago hopefully will give women courage, the women to whom this has happened more recently, to not wait 30 years to talk about it.
Hmm. Well, let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Rama in San Francisco. Hi, Rama. Welcome to the show.
Hi. First, thanks for having the show. And I have one question and then just one quick comment. So answers no to what a bunch of people have said, including the host, there's no criminal investigation going on. So honestly, today is really about their impressions, mm-hmm. right? So the senators are making, and the public, frankly, is making their decision on whether they think this happened or didn't happen on their impression of Kavanaugh and their impression on Ford. And so it seems grotesquely unfair for Rachel Mitchell to have the opportunity to develop a relationship right through this back and forth, and then the Democratic senators to have 5 minutes in which they're kind of pontificating. I don't understand. Has this ever been done before? It seems really unusual and also unjust. And don't we elect senators to be able to ask respectful questions? And the fact that they don't have confidence that they can do that is pretty embarrassing. And then to my comment, just everybody's like, why is she bringing it up at this time? I can't imagine what other time she would bring it up. To me, this seems like the absolutely most appropriate time. This person is running for a public office in which there's a public hearing, and she should come in, and this is exactly the time she should bring it up, I think, for any woman who's been assaulted, myself included, right? I wouldn't bring it up until there was a public time when, you know, this person was going to be in a position for life and being paid by tax dollars. Like, it's absolutely the right time.
Mm.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the call. A number of Democrats have said this is completely unprecedented. This has never happened before. And I'm just reading from USA Today. Deborah Ramirez, the second woman to come forward publicly with a sexual assault allegation against Kavanaugh, said she would be willing to testify. So why isn't she testifying? Leslie, what are your thoughts about just how unprecedented this is?
It, as the Democrats have said, it is completely unprecedented. And I also think it's the Republicans being chicken, because there's 11 men. They're scared of what impression would be given by their questioning of Dr. Ford. I also personally think They're scared that they will not be able to control themselves and that the misogyny that has come out indirectly would come out directly. Orrin Hatch himself said, I can do this. I'm capable of this. And if you go back and look at the Anita Hill hearings, you see exactly what he's capable of. And it would not be a pretty picture at this moment in time for the Republicans to have put that foot forward. And it's no accident that they picked a woman prosecutor
right.
to do this.
Well, and if you just listened to Senator Grassley's opening statement, he talked about this being equal suffering. Dr. Ford, you have received death threats. Mr. Kavanaugh has received death threats. This has been horrible for both of you.
Yes.
So it was as if equal suffering.
Right. It's a level playing field. It's just two things happening to people. And I don't know that I mean, this was the first I had heard that and any allegation that Justice Kavanaugh had gotten death threats. I haven't heard that before, and we don't have any evidence of that, but it's unquestionable that Dr. Ford has gotten them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in her opening statement, she said she's been separated from her family for safety reasons. Her email has been hacked, and she said she wanted to testify to talk about how Kavanaugh's actions have damaged her life. And if you're just joining us, we've been on the air for about 40 minutes now, taking a break. The committee is on a lunch break. This morning, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford gave her opening statement, and then she has been questioned by Democrats on the committee. Republicans are not questioning her, but Rachel Mitchell is questioning her. They're going in 5-minute chunks, which also it feels a little strange.
It is very strange. If you listen to Grassley, each time Mitchell questions, she's questioning on behalf of a Republican congressperson. And I think it's interesting because at some point they're going to go after Dr. Ford for being a Democrat.
Right.
Well, actually, Ms. Mitchell is a Republican. So, I mean, that's neither here nor there, but it's neither here nor there on both sides.
Mm. Well, they're expected to come back from lunch soon, and we will cut away to go back to the questioning. Let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Jenny in San Francisco. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Good. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
I have a comment, having survived multiple sexual assaults, sexual abuse from age 4 to 15, physical violence assaults, which were not sexual. And the thing that I unfortunately know is the difference between the two. One really is, you know, sex to begin with can be beautiful, fun, spiritual, a nothing burger, or it can be really an assault to the sense of self, our safety as a woman, my connection to my body, but most of all to my soul. And this led to years of self-harming, which, because I had a lot of therapy and because I'm incredibly resilient and strong, I've been able to get much better about. I had zero support from my family. Mm-hmm. If anything, I think there's a legacy of shame. So there was just a sort of an acceptance of intergenerational abuse. So that did not help me at all. I've been very lucky to have friends who've been supportive and who've been able to tell when I am in the midst of a PTSD sort of, there's so many ways that one dissociates. I don't do it anymore. But I have had tons of therapy. I am lucky that I was able to afford it. But more than anything, I also had some of the resources. EMDR was awesome. I cannot, for violence or, sexual violence assaults or non-sexual, for both of it, it's great. But what I would like to say is that there are others that are being studied, and it really... I wish that they would do more. There's MDMA, the sort of ecstasy kind of thing, that under certain settings, this can be really helpful. A lot of what people don't understand is how trauma is absorbed into the body and how it stays like at a cellular level. I have so many triggers. I was just a walking trigger bomb, and I am really healthy now, but I'm a very resilient person. There's also 5-MeO-DMT, which is illegal in this country. If you can do that, if somebody can do it under the guide and with a therapist, it can allow for all of the anger, rage, and to reconnect with one's sense of safety and soul. And I would hopefully, I hope the United States allows for that eventually to happen, because for me, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for my friends, for the great therapist that I had, for the EMDR, and for some of the other work that I did that was extremely alternative. But, you know, the thing also I want to just point out is that if somebody knifes somebody, it's a violent, non-sexual assault. And men expect women to talk about sexual violence or assault the same way. We do not remember it the same way. It doesn't have the shame, and it doesn't crush our soul.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jenny. Thank you for sharing that story. Leslie?
I think one of the things, Jenny, that you pointed out that we as a society have to deal with is how families handle women who come forward about sexual assault, either as children or as adults. Because what doesn't happen, or what does happen actually, is the social ostracization of the victim. And that needs to stop, because that's a major source of a major reason women don't come forward. And also, sometimes the social ostracization, the retaliation, the disbelief is as harmful as the actual assault may have been. So until we as a society and a culture say this is important, that we believe women, that we will support them, and that we do not put the perpetrator and the victim on the same level playing field.
And then going back to resources, I'd love to get an answer to this question, and maybe you know. In countries that have universal health care, does that include therapy?
I don't know.
Because I'm just curious, if we had that and it included therapy, I mean, can you imagine? That would be a game changer for so many people.
I certainly think it would. I mean, it's already become a little bit of a game changer now that the Affordable Care Act required therapy. So I know, like, for instance, if you were a Kaiser member 5 years ago, it was almost impossible as an assault survivor to get much therapy. Maybe you got 3, 5, 10 sessions. But now, with the change in the health care, that Kaiser has completely changed and provides a lot more support. But there, you know, healthcare is not universal in this country.
Right. Are there any other changes that people should know about? I didn't know that about Kaiser.
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, if anyone else knows, we'd love to hear from you. If you're just tuning in, this is Your Call. The Senate Judiciary Committee is on a lunch break. This morning, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. She accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault. She said she's received death threats. She's been separated from her family for safety reasons. She said that she has testified to tell the committee how Kavanaugh's actions have damaged her life. And we are on a break right now. As soon as they go back, we'll cut back in so we can resume questioning. And then after that, Brett Kavanaugh is expected to testify. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Excuse me, I just caught a minor cold. We have an email from Kirsten who says, I am an early childhood educator and a student at SF State. I hope the outcome of this public questioning will be that all people will never again feel ashamed or guilty for any adult that has been endured. I hope that the culture of shame will be eliminated for our communities. Issues of abuse need to be dealt with immediately. Most importantly, we need to teach our children to respect everyone, respect each other's physical and mental space. I have been wondering what teachers are going to do and how they're going to talk to their classrooms about this.
I think that's a really interesting question, and I think it's probably very varied state to state and locality to locality.
Right.
And I suspect that there will probably be instances in which teachers bring this up in the classroom and will face repercussions for bringing it up in the classroom in some states and areas. But it's very important. It's a critical moment in history, just like the Me Too movement. And although we've seen something like this before in the early 90s with Anita Hill, we can only hope that this time some of the change will actually stick.
The other thing that was interesting was to hear Rachel Mitchell ask Dr. Ford why she decided to get a lawyer and who recommended that she get a lawyer. Leslie, you are an attorney who represents people who have been harassed or have faced discrimination on the job. Can you talk about that? the importance of getting a lawyer and how you should make that decision?
Certainly. I think that it's always good to consult with a lawyer so you know your rights. For one thing is if you decide to take want to take some sort of civil action, some sort of lawsuit against either the perpetrator or, in the employment context, the company, you have a limited time to do that. Right now, it's 1 year in California, and it's even shorter if you're not an employee and the perpetrator is a member of a public entity. So if you're on BART and you're sexually assaulted by a BART employee, you have 6 months
Wow.
to file a tort claim. So there are very strict limits. Luckily, right now, in part because of the Me Too movement, sitting on Governor Brown's desk is a bill that would extend the 1 year to 3 years, which we are very much hoping he signs, because I think we see from all of this, from the Me Too movement, that coming forward within a year of the events is sometimes extremely difficult.
Mm. Do you know the number of that bill?
I don't offhand, but I can get it to you during our break.
Okay, great. Because Governor Brown has just a couple more days to sign or veto.
That's very true. And I would also say if you were sexually assaulted before the age of 18 and you want to seek a civil suit, you actually have till age 26 in this state.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you for that information. Let's go to a few more callers. Let's hear from Angie in Castro Valley. Hi, Angie. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Am I on?
Yes, you're fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I just heard something a little while ago. I just wanted to make a point that this is unprecedented in, I guess, the political arena, that a woman 30 years later will come, you know, face her accuser. Maybe that's true, but I was raped at 12 years old quite violently. And I really liked what the previous caller had to say about the shame, the legacy on all of this. And, you know, it was a great part of the Me Too movement that helped me to come out of this. I never told anyone, ever, until I was 48 years old. And it was life-changing, and I've got, as a previous caller, you know, I've gotten help. I've my great support from my family and my friends, and it's been very therapeutic. But in my experience, it is not unprecedented that a woman would wait 30 years because of all of the shame and everything else that's involved in it. So for me, that is a moot point. Just because he's in the political arena that a woman is coming forward 30 years later.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for that. Thank you for sharing your story, Angie. What we were referring to was the fact that Republican senators are not questioning Dr. Blasey Ford. They brought in someone else to do the questioning, and that's what is unprecedented about this. I mean, we're not hearing from any of them except for Chuck Grassley, and a question here or there from Lindsey Graham. Are you still with us?
I am.
Okay. What else would you say, Angie? Because we're getting so many calls from women who talked about being assaulted when they were younger and didn't say anything for, you know, decades afterwards. I mean, just watching this hearing, you know, a lot of the analysts are just, they're focused on the politics. They're not focused on all the survivors and what they're dealing with right now. So what is this all bringing up for you?
Oh, I cry, I bawl, I'm crying right now. The Me Too movement has been so instrumental, and even it's amazing to me, even my sisters. I have four sisters, and the way that they comment on how a woman waits 30 years, even though they know my story. Well, 30 years, I mean, they even make, you know, it's sad, but they make jokes about it, you know, 30 years. And the Me Too movement, excuse me, has helped me to be very verbal about it and release my anger in a very positive way. It's just every time I hear it, I get so, you just were talking about Governor Brown and you were talking about the statute of limitations. This is just egregious to me that a woman has a statute of limitations to bring her violator to justice. That is, I can't go there because I get so angry and so upset about it. And it makes me want to take justice in my own hands. I mean, not literally, I wouldn't do it, but, you know, it just, it's a lot of turmoil and a lot of anger and a lot of frustration.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for calling, Angie. Leslie, you had a quick clarification, yes. Then we're going to go back to the hearing.
Very quickly, the criminal statute of limitations now in California for rape is non-existent. There's no limitation on the period of time in which the district attorney can bring a charge of rape, and that's a new law.
Hmm. Well, Angie, thank you so much. On our media roundtable, we're going to continue following this. We'll talk about media coverage of all of this. And then next week, we'll definitely do, or in the coming weeks, another show and open the lines to continue hearing from all of your stories. Thank you all so much for calling and sharing your stories. Leslie Levy is an attorney who represents survivors. Leslie, thanks for your work. Thank you for coming in. And now we are going to go back to the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings and NPR's coverage.